the Fleischmann's Yeast Hour, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Vallee.
My time is your time. Your time is my time.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Vallee and Company. Tonight's cast, reading from left to right, Mr. Edmund Gwenn, star of J.B. Priestley's new comedy, Laburnum Grove. Master Freddie Bartholomew, the brilliant child actor who plays David Copperfield in the new film based on the Dickens masterpiece. Tom Howard, accompanied by his customary shadow, George Sheldon. Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel and his partner, Bud, celebrated inventors of the rockless rocking chair for people who like to sit in rocking chairs, but who do not care to rock. The Stewart sisters, the Keys of Etterate, and the alleged Connecticut Yankees, who opened the show with the first of the three new tunes from the Warner Brothers Gold Diggers of 1935, Lullaby of Broadway. Brothers Warner, Jack, Harry, and the Major goes the credit of reviving interest in screen musicals, pioneers in introducing musicals in the first place. When the interest seemed to have swung out of vogue, the Warners brought them back by the most daring and pretentious creation ever made, 42nd Street. The fact that this type of offering is now firmly established is definitely attributable to the success of that extravaganza. It was followed by the first of the Gold Digger series, which in some ways topped 42nd Street. In one of the mammoth studio buildings next to the one we use to make sweet music, I watched Busby Berkeley alternately sitting in deep thought and actively directing the 1935 Gold Diggers. The songs of Dubin and Warren are among the best they've ever written. This is one of their greatest and is called Lullaby of Broadway. Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway, the rumble of the subway trains, the rattle of the taxis,
the daffodils who entertain, and Angelo's and Maxie.
When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's oily in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn.
Good night, baby. Good night, little Broadway.
Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight. Let's call it a day. Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hidey-ho and boop-a-doo, the lullaby of Broadway. The band begins to go to town, and everyone goes crazy. Hush-a-bye, I'll buy you this and that, you hear a daddy saying. And baby goes home to her flat to sleep all day.
Sleep
tight, baby. call it a day. Listen to the lullaby of old Broadway.
Those sweetly solemn sounds announce, as you know, the presence in our midst of Colonel Stupnagel and Bud, who have proven that radio comedy may be intelligent and also successful. Gentlemen, have a microphone.
Thank you, Rudy. It is a distinct pleasure for the Colonel and me to have been invited to participate in this Fleischman program. We have been staunch admirers of Rudy's ever since he first went on the air. Isn't that right, Colonel? Yeah, the Colonel can do but one thing at a time, so he can't answer because he's playing our theme song on the mighty gas pipe organ. There is the ending. And in a moment, the Colonel will be up to speak to you in person. Boy, that's the grandest finish you ever had, Colonel. You know that? Come here. I mean, you're here.
Hey, but I've got great news for you.
Yeah, Bud.
Yeah, we're going to be on the Fleischman Show.
Oh, gee, we're going to be on the Fleischman Show. When?
Oh, in a week.
A week from when?
Oh, in a week from last Thursday.
Yeah?
When would be a week from last Thursday?
Let me see now. A week from last Thursday. A week from last... That's tonight.
Oh, boy, we're right on time. I thought we were late.
Yeah. Say, you know, Rudy asked us if we would do three things in particular tonight, Colonel. The first is to report some more inventions.
Mm-hmm.
The next is to interview one of the little-known men of industry. And the third is do one of our dramas. Now, tell me, to begin with, have you any new invention?
You know darn well I have. You were at rehearsal.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, my first invention is a new kind of a wig, Bud. You know, a toupee.
A wig, huh?
Yeah, with the hair standing on end.
The hair stands on end on this wig of yours? What's that for?
It's for bald-headed men when they're reading mystery stories.
Oh, I see, yeah. But what happens when they're reading other kinds of stories, eh?
Well, eh?
I say, what happens when they're reading other kinds of stories?
Yeah, then I have another new invention, too, Bud. It's a stepladder without any steps in it.
No steps in the ladder, huh?
No, it's for washing windows in the cellar.
In the cellar.
But even more peachy, perhaps, are my new patented eyeglasses with stripes running up and down, you know?
Stripes running up and down?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Why the stripes, Colonel?
Well, that's for bank tellers so they can recognize their friends when they see them on the street.
Oh, well, I guess we better quit with that one, don't you think?
Yes, then I have a new kind of a mousetrap, Bud. It's a dandy. It catches horses.
A mousetrap is for catching mice, not horses.
Not my trap. My mousetrap catches horses.
Well, then it's a horse trap, not a mousetrap.
No, it's a mousetrap.
Well, how come?
Well, I don't want to catch any horses.
You don't want to catch horses, huh?
No.
You want to catch mice?
Who said anything about catching mice? Whoever heard of a mouse race? People go to horse races, not mouse races. A house and a morse are two different things.
A house and a morse are two different... Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, gee, that knock came just in time. I didn't know how we're ever going to get to a finish of that mousetrap for horses business. Come in, whoever that was. Come in. Well, if it isn't Mr. Sneak Scribble. Say, we've been waiting for you, Mr. Sneak Scribble, you know, to interview you.
Oh, Buzz. Hello, Colonel.
Shh. Well, what's the shh business, Mr. Sneak Scribble? What's that for?
I've just come back from riding on eggs.
From riding on eggs? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's your business, isn't it?
Yeah. I spend nearly all my spare time riding on eggs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, only the other day you read in the papers where a farmer found an egg in his hen house that had riding on it.
Oh, yeah. I think I did see something about that egg, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Sneak Scribble, what was that was written on it?
The egg said, Prosperity, 1935, and you should have seen the farmer when he got a good look at it.
Oh, I see. You hang around until you see the farmer read what you've written on the egg.
Yeah,
huh?
It's fun to see his reaction. Once I wrote, stock market going down.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
Late in 1929, and look what happened.
Yes, look. Do you do anything else besides write on eggs, Mr. Scribsnickel?
Steak Scribble is the name.
Oh, yeah,
I have a sideliner, too. I spend my vacation writing notes and putting them in bottles and putting the bottles in the ocean so people will find them and say, oh, I have found a note in a bottle.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Once I wrote a note and I put it in a bottle in the Gulf Stream, way down in the Gulf of Mexico, the note said, Don't try to hide from me, honey. I know where you are. Mm-hmm. And it landed 5 years later in Iceland, and 500 Icelanders deserted the island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, so you can see why it is that I write stuff on eggs and in bottles.
Yes, well, Mr. Snake Scribble, that's very interesting indeed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've often wondered who it was who did all this secret writing, and now I know.
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah. Well, by the way, are you thinking of any new ideas in connection with your line of work?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to see if I can get a job erasing skywriting.
Erasing skywriting. Oh, yeah, I see. You mean after an aviator has written advertising in smoke across the sky, it'll be your job to erase it,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, wouldn't it be awful if all that writing stayed right up in the sky, you know? Mm. After a while, people couldn't even see the sun, and the sun is good for people, isn't it, Mr. Buzz?
Yes, yes, I know, but the wind blows skywriting away in only a few moments, Mr. Snake Scribble.
Oh, it does, hey, well, so long.
Well, so long, Mr. Snake Scribble.
So long.
Colonel and Bud, by the way, will be back again later in the program. This is one of the newest and most atmospheric of geographical songs, written round the playground of the film colony in California, Malibu. Wandered hand in hand across the sand of Malibu, beside the silvery sea, just we two. The moon hung high above that night of love in Malibu. Each hour was heavenly, oh, billows, billows, ocean, ocean, roar, tide, closer, closer, creeping to the shore, and bring with you two lips that used to say there'd come a day in Malibu when she'd say yes to me. Singing this type of composition, and he gives it an excellent Lilton treatment in Gold Diggers of 35. I'm going shopping with you. Whenever you go shopping to buy a dress that's new, honey, I'll keep my eye on the dress that you try on, cause I'm going shopping with you. When you go to the jeweler to buy a gem or two, on your fourth little finger, a ring's going to linger, cause I'm going shopping with you. Lots of shoes and stockings and plenty of new shuffles. That's what I would go for the cute little baby inside those gold holes. You go and pick the cottage, I'll put the mortgage through.
Honey, I don't know whether we'll move in together, but I'm going shopping with you.
Got a lot to do.
If they paint you the silly, they can't paint a lily, but I'm going shopping with you.
Then I will go to the grocer to buy an egg or two.
You will bring home the bacon, or am I mistaken about going shopping with you? We can build a nest with sweet kisses, and then someday maybe we'll be blessed with, in the pig Latin language, a navy bay say.
I'm going like a baby blanket, honey, all trimmed in pretty baby blue.
I'll be right there behind you, cause let me remind you that I'm going shopping with you in the basement.
I'm going shopping with you.
Bring your basket.
I'm going shopping with you.
Not since Charles Lawton arrived in New York 3 seasons ago has an actor from England received a volume of critical praise which greeted Edmund Gwenn after 2 recent openings of J.B. Priestley's play, Laburnum Grove. By arrangement with Gilbert Miller and Milton Schubert, we introduce this distinguished visitor from London to the American radio audience. Perhaps you saw Mr. Gwenn as Jess Oakroyd in the picture version of The Good Companions. In Laburnum Grove, he plays another of Priestley's jovial Britons, George Radfern, who commutes to Laburnum Grove from a wholesale paper business in the city. He is, ostensibly, a solid citizen. His ruling passion, we are led to believe in Act One, is the fine art of growing tomatoes at home. Suddenly, however, we begin to suspect that old George is not quite what he seems, but we aren't altogether sure. Scotland Yard's Inspector Stack shares our suspicions, but he isn't altogether sure either. Here's the question. Is George Radfern a model family man, an expert tomato grower, a pattern of all the suburban virtues, or is he the head of an international criminal gang? Scotland Yard wants to know, and see if you can decide. As our curtain rises, good old George admits Inspector Stack, played by Reynolds Denniston, to the Radfern living room.
Come in, Inspector.
Thank you.
Won't you take a seat?
Thanks.
Well, this is very interesting to me, you know, Inspector. I've never had the pleasure of talking to anybody from Scotland Yard before.
No, I don't suppose you have, Mr. Redfern.
No, I haven't. I say, you must have an exciting sort of life, you chaps, eh? Different from some of us, what?
It's not as exciting as people seem to think.
Oh.
Most of it's dull routine and very long hours at that. Not many quiet evenings at home.
Ah, that's a pity.
Yes, Mrs. Redfern was telling me this afternoon that you like to be quiet at home with your greenhouses and so forth.
Oh, my wife and daughter. They often laugh at me, you know. They think I'm a very dull old stick.
Still, I've known wives and children go sadly wrong about men and think they were leading one sort of life when all the time they were leading a very different sort of life.
Is that so? Never struck that myself, you know.
Ah, you surprise me.
If there's anything I can tell you, Inspector, I should be only too delighted. Though I can't imagine for the life of me why you've taken the trouble to come and see me.
Trouble is nothing to us, Mr. Radfern, if the case is big enough.
I can well believe that.
For instance, there's a case we've been working at now for over 3 years.
Really? Well, I call that most interesting. Over 3 years, you think?
Yes, over 3 years.
Mm.
And no trouble and reasonable expense spared. Mind you, we'll win in the end. We can't lose.
Well, I should hope not, Inspector. We taxpayers want to see something for our money nowadays, you know.
Well, sometimes we're very slow.
Yes, but you're sure. Isn't that it?
That's it, Mr. Radfern. You see, for the last 4 years at least, there's been a gang. A very clever, well-organized gang who've been engaged in counterfeiting banknotes and treasury notes.
No. Well, I wouldn't have thought that possible. Not in these days, you know.
Now, this gang operates here in England and also abroad, chiefly from Amsterdam and Brussels. Some of the notes are printed here, some of them there. Here's one of their notes.
Really?
Perhaps you'd like to see it.
Oh, I would.
Here it is.
Oh, thank you, Inspector. Thank you. Well, upon my soul. If this is a fake, it'd take me in, it would really. Of course, I'm not an expert, you know. I don't pretend to be. But I am in the paper trade.
So I understand, Mr. Redfern.
I wouldn't hesitate a minute to give anybody 8 half-crowns for this step. Isn't it wonderful what they can do? The drawing, the figures, the watermark. Well, I never would have thought it.
Surprising, isn't it? Oh, they're a clever lot.
Oh, they must be.
Yes, and even cleverer getting hold of the right sort of paper.
Yes.
And with their engraving and printing. Mm. And with the way they distributed the slush.
The slush? What's that?
Slush.
I don't know the slush.
And the banks and the Treasury haven't given us a minute's peace about this case. But at last, we are getting results.
Splendid.
Yes, hundreds of little details that haven't meant anything much for months are now beginning to look like something.
What, just like a jigsaw puzzle, eh?
Yes, that's it. You see, it works like this.
Uh-huh.
We come across a nice little nest of clues in, say, Birmingham.
Birmingham? Well, now, that's funny. I was there only today.
Yes. Now, amongst those clues is a name. Just one of several names in a notebook. Now, that name may turn up somewhere else. Perhaps in Glasgow. Perhaps in Amsterdam. Well, the owner of that name is perhaps passing himself off as a quiet, respectable citizen and businessman. And he thinks he's safe. Do you follow me?
I should think I do, Inspector. Oh, poor devil. I can see it all, you know. This chap, he imagines he's safe. And of course, he isn't. Because you've got a lot of evidence against him.
Oh, yes, a lot of evidence.
And of course, it's solid evidence that wouldn't make you look silly if you took such a quiet, respectable chap into a police court.
No, that's not quite it. Oh. Because in this case, we haven't bothered to pile up the solid evidence as yet. But we've got one or two interesting little bits. Would you like to hear them?
I would, Inspector.
Well, for example, we know that a member of this counterfeiting ring arrived in Glasgow from the continent on the 23rd of last month and was met by one of his confederates there.
Oh.
And we're pretty sure we can prove that that quiet, respectable citizen we were talking about was also there in Glasgow on the 23rd of last month.
Glasgow? On the 23rd of last month? 23rd, you said, didn't you, Inspector? Let me look in my pocket diary. Not that I was in Glasgow myself, you know. As a matter of fact, I was in
Newcastle. And so was the man from the continent. Not in Glasgow at all. That was a little trap, and you walked straight into it.
Did I? I'm afraid I don't quite follow you there, Inspector. You're a bit too sharp for me, I expect, eh?
I shouldn't be surprised.
No, what I was going to say was I remember the 23rd of last month. Because our bowling club here had its annual outing that day. You know, up the river first, then finished off at the Palladium, and I was with them. Oh, about 20 of us there were. Yes, that's what I was meaning, you know, Inspector. Now, isn't that what they call an alibi? Well, you know, Inspector, if I was that man, and you were silly enough to rush me into court, well, that's the sort of thing, an alibi like that, which would make you all look very foolish, I imagine. Wouldn't it? Of course, not that I know anything about these things. Well, not really, you know, but I've read an awful lot of those detective yarns.
Now, listen, Redfern. If you were that man we were talking about, you know what I'd say to you?
I can't imagine.
I'd say to you straight. We know you've been in this, but as yet we can't prove it. Though sooner or later we'll be able to prove it. But as the case has dragged on long enough and we want quick results, don't wait like a fool till we put you in the dock when nobody's going to have any mercy on you. Tell us all you know now. Help us clean the whole thing up. And we won't even try to prove anything against you.
Well, of course. Of course, Inspector, I can't answer for this man.
Make an effort and try.
But still, I fancy that, well, the very first thing he'd say to you would be, you're bluffing.
And you know what I'd apply to that? Just to show him that we weren't bluffing?
No.
First, I'd simply give him two names. Peter Corderman and William Fraserly. No bluffing there, you see. We know about Corderman and Fraserly.
You know, Inspector, this is as good as any film or detective tale to me. It is really. In fact, it's better. It's a treat. Oh, I say, do go on. Tell me some more.
Now listen, Radfern. Let's drop this nonsense and talk straight.
Oh, go on.
You're in this counterfeiting game. I know damned well you are. And you know that I know. That's straight talking, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know whether it's straight or not. It seems to be very offensive talking.
Well, here's some more. Now, we want convictions, of course, but what we want even more than that is to break up the gang as soon as possible, because the banks and the Treasury are at us all the time. Tell us all you know now. Put the game into our hands, and we'll forget about you. And you know what it means if we don't forget about you. Let me know this. It's my first offense, and I didn't know any better humbug for you. If you do find yourself in court, you'll get as much as the judge can give you. And that's plenty. Now, what do you say?
This is what I say, Inspector Stack. My name's George Redfern. I'm in the paper trade. I can prove it. I live at Ferndale, Laburnum Grove, Shooter's Green. when I'm well known as a decent, respectable citizen and a householder. I've been swindled myself in my time. But if ever I've injured any man, woman, or child in this country, then it's news to me. And you haven't enough evidence against me to take me as far as that door. And you know it.
Give me a bit more time, and I'll take you a lot further than that door.
Oh? Well, talking of doors, Inspector, that one on your right's in very good working order.
Well, that's that. However, perhaps you'll find me at your door again before long.
Oh, I do hope so. And thank you so much for calling this time. I've enjoyed this, you know. It's been a real treat to me. Something to tell my friends about, this is.
Good. Any friend of yours, Mr. Redfern, is always interesting to me.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
You wouldn't like to take me round and introduce me, would you?
Oh, I shouldn't think that would be necessary, Inspector. What, must you go? Oh, well, good night, then. Let's see, this is your hat, isn't it? The hard one.
Yes, that's it.
Well, can I get you a taxi?
No, thanks, I'll walk.
Oh, well, good night, Inspector.
Good night, Mr. Redfern.
Good night.
Good night.
Oh, Mother.
Yes, George?
Mother, come in a minute, will you?
Well, has the inspector gone?
Oh, yes, he's gone, dear. Mother, do you remember all that stuff? All those little books from the shipping companies that Elsie got to amuse herself with?
Oh, yes. She's still got them in her room upstairs.
Oh, has she? Good. Ask her to bring them down with her when she comes here, will you? I've been thinking we all might take a little trip. Sort of get away from what Elsie calls this suburban stuffiness for a time, eh?
Really, George? Could we? A sea voyage?
Oh, yes, dear, yes. It would have to be a sea voyage.
But, George, what about your tomatoes?
By Jove, you're right, dear. I couldn't very well leave the tomatoes, could I, eh? No. Oh, no, I couldn't.
You couldn't do that.
Too soon, the spell was broken. I woke up too soon, ending a dream. You were so beautiful, so wonderful, and so divine. There was such tenderness in your caress, you were almost mine, I woke up too soon. Oh, how you thrilled me when my lips met yours, was heavenly. We sang to the stars, we danced on the moon, the world was a year of you. Night, make my dreams come true, my darling. I woke up too soon.
This is the Fleischman Yeast Hour, broadcast from the Variety Theater in Radio City under the direction of Rudy Valley. Rudy presents Stupnagel and Bud, Edmund Gwenn, Freddie Bartholomew, and Tom Howard.
Introducing acts on this program, we always try to avoid hackneyed phrases. There is, however, only one way to tell you why Tom Howard is playing a return engagement here this week. Tom is back by popular request. The argument continues. In this corner, George Sheldon, and over here, Tom Howard.
Tom, how are you?
How are you, George?
Oh, never felt better in my life.
Good, George. You feel all right, huh?
Feel marvelous.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, George.
I can't kick.
Rheumatism, huh? I was waiting for that.
No,
I had
no.
All around a while.
No. Huh? Say, Tom, by the way, I hear you were out of the town.
Oh, did you hear about it?
Yeah,
it was. Ain't it funny how things get around
they
you?
Certainly
do. Small world. I was in Chicago, George.
In Chicago?
Yeah,
hey,
I was in Chicago. I had an accident out here.
No.
Yeah, sure.
Talking about Chicago, Tom, my wife was out in Chicago, and she had a turn. She met with a terrible accident out there.
Oh, yeah? I thought she met you in Brooklyn, George.
Oh, Tom,
I thought
of course she did, yes.
Oh, I didn't
know. Well, now, Tom, I know sarcasm from you.
Oh, wait, what are you... Hey, right you better now. Put that down. You'll break it, George.
No, that's all right.
Say, where'd you get the fiddle? Does Rudy know you? Little Rudy, you better take that off that fella.
Don't be silly, Tom. I play this. This is my own instrument.
You what, George?
I play the fiddle.
Why, George? Why do you...
Why? What is... Look at that.
That's a nice
200 years old, that violin.
Yeah, it looks as good as a new one, George.
Well, naturally,
Yes.
The older it is, the sweeter it is.
Oh, yeah. Like the sweeter, the bone, the nearer the meat.
Something like that.
Keep the doctor. You get much money for playing that?
Get much money?
Yeah.
$500 a week, Tom, for playing that.
Oh, George, don't be modest. $500
a week? $500 a week.
For putting that under your chin?
Yes, sir.
And going like, how much does the piano player get over there, George?
Oh, well, he only gets $200. Out in $50 a week.
Is that all? Why don't he put it under his chin, George, to get the other two?
Wait for a minute, Tom. You don't put a piano under your chin to play it.
How do you know how I play a piano?
What do you play on that, George?
If I did,
I'd play anything on this, Tom.
Oh, no, you couldn't play anything. Yeah. You can't play pinochle.
No, of course not.
There you are, George. You couldn't do
Tom,
that.
I mean I play numbers.
Oh, numbers.
Play any number you want. What number would you like to hear?
Number six. Number six. Can you play 7, 8, 9, 10?
Wait for a minute. What's the matter with you? Are you crazy?
I don't know. The jury is still out, George. What other thing do you know?
Wait a minute, Tom. The whole trouble with you is I don't think you know what music is.
Oh, what are you talking about? When I was 2 years old, I used to play on the linoleum. Didn't I?
Well, how do you play on the linoleum?
I just sat on it. I don't know.
No. All right, Tom. Tom, what is music?
Oh, music?
Yeah.
Why, music is when you... Well...
All right, come on.
Don't rush me. Don't rush me. Rome wasn't built in a day.
What has Rome got to do with it?
Didn't Rome... play the fiddle while Nero burns. He's burned down.
Tom,
I know
you're
music.
Just evading the question.
No.
What is music?
Music is music has charms to
soothe the savage beast.
You took the words right out of my mouth. You know
somebody told you.
No,
that.
I read in the paper.
I'll tell you what music is.
Now look out, Rudy's listening.
That's all right. Rudy will coincide with me in whatever I say.
Yeah.
Music is a combination of sounds. Designated by notes.
Yeah? Yes. The notes. What's the notes, George?
All right, now I'll tell you the notes. The first note is do.
First note is do.
Yes.
Well, that's...
The second note is ray.
Oh, that's easy, Ray. That's a funny coincidence. Ray is my wife's name, George.
That is
now, isn't that strange, George?
Well, that should be easy for you to remember that.
Yeah.
Always remember, Ray comes after dough.
Continually. All the time. Five here and 10 here.
Never mind. Now, the third note is me.
Yeah, third note is you, George.
What'd you say?
I say the third note is you.
No, the third note is not you.
I know it ain't. It's you. You.
Tom, the third note is me.
Ain't that what I said?
No, you said the third note was you.
I don't want any credit for the note, George. You can have the note. I don't interrupt.
Tom, listen, didn't you just say the third note was you?
George, I didn't say the third note was me.
That's right.
What? The third note is me?
Yeah.
Oh, the third note is me.
Yes.
Oh, that's where the trouble is.
Exactly. Misunderstanding.
That's all misunderstanding. Yeah. I thought the third note was you.
No, it's me.
It's you. George, now, wait a minute. Now, listen. We're getting on an argument there, George.
All right, Tom. What's the matter now?
Just said the third note was me.
That's right.
But just now you say it's you.
I never said it was you.
George, didn't you just say the third note was me?
That's right.
George, will you make up your mind before there's blood spattered all over Rudy here?
There'll be no blood spattered at all, Tom. Tom, all I said was the third note was me.
All right, let's forget about the whole thing.
All right, forget about
that. New business.
New business.
Read the minutes of the next meeting. Where do we go from now?
Where do you go from where? Where was I?
You're lost now.
Naturally, with
you. You were where the third note belonged to you. Where the third note was you.
Tom, when did I say the third note was you?
George! Could it be we're both nuts, George? Could it be
I feel all right. Now, all I said was the third note was me.
Oh, George, if we only had a brick or something. Nice, clean studio they got
Listen,
here.
Listen, Tom, don't you realize when I say the third note is me, I don't mean me.
No?
No.
What do you mean?
Me.
Me? George, this is worse than your sister's jiffy, George. This is worse than your... Will you get it straight?
Listen, Tom, all I'm trying to teach you is a musical scale.
Yeah, I know.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do.
Yeah.
Do on the top and do on the bottom.
Just like a pie.
Oh, you got a lot of crust to say that,
Tom.
All right, just like a pie. But what comes in between?
Ruins. I don't care what you put in. George, tell me, why do we have to argue like this?
We don't have to argue,
Tom. Why can't we be friends like you?
Oh, that'd be great. If you and I could be friends, it'd be marvelous.
All right, George,
shake hands.
Friends.
Friends to the end.
Friends to the end.
All right, say, Tom, let me have $10, will you?
That's the end.
All right.
was a charmer of snakes. Put it in.
T-5-4-5. He was a trainer of animals.
Animals. She had the face of an angel. She had the heart of a saint.
He had the smile of a devil and a heart as black as paint.
He paid his addresses to win her caresses, and that's what he finally got.
Oh, me, oh, my, she learned to care a lot.
Well, no rattler could rip her, no python could nip her, for she was the last word in class.
But sweet Fozzie Bonner, the lovely snake charmer, who fell for a snake in the grass. She shunned all the geezers of flying trapezes and led all the acrobats past. But sweet Fozzie Bonner, the lovely snake charmer, went boom, or a snake in the grass.
She didn't care for his rhinoceroses. Shuddy-oo,
shuddy-oo, sing the drum.
She didn't care for his hippopotamuses. Shuddy-oo,
shuddy-oo, shuddy-oo, shuddy-oo.
But when they started kissing, the snake started hissing, for he was a snake in the grass. Well, no boa constrictor had slapped her or kicked her. She had them all goofy with gas. But sweet Flossie Farmer, the lovely snake charmer, was doped by a snake in the grass. And the dwarfs and the giants cried out their defiance. They saw through her lover like glass. Sweet Flossie Farmer, the lovely snake charmer, was nuts for a snake in the grass. He didn't care for his sea lionesses.
Johnny-a-stone,
he didn't care for his kangaroosomuses.
Johnny-a-stone,
she swore she'd obey him, her salary pay him, the snakes over her, the poor lad. So it isn't surprising they filled him with poison, for he was a snake in the grass.
Hollywood has made a picture version of David Copperfield with all the loving care Charles Dickens himself could desire. Hugh Walpole made the adaptation. A score or so of stars are part of the cast. More than a year was spent in preparation. But the thing most people are going to talk about and remember is the charming English child who plays David during boyhood, Master Freddie Bartholomew. Freddie is seeing New York this week. He's in our audience tonight. I have the permission of his aunt and his teacher to introduce him to you. I want you to meet Freddie Bartholomew.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. When my aunt and I came over from England last year for a short visit to America, we only came over with one idea, or at least two ideas, and that was to have a good time and go sightseeing. But when we arrived here, we found there were lots of notices in the newspapers informing us that they were looking for a boy to play the part of David Copperfield. So we thought we'd go down to the West Coast on a chance. And when we arrived there, we found there were hundreds and hundreds of boys putting in for the part of David Copperfield. And I must say that I was terribly lucky when I was told that I had the part. I made many friends out in Hollywood, and among my best friend was Mickey Rooney. And I've already learned to eat chewing gum every day. So perhaps I'll become an American very soon. Well, I do hope you'll all enjoy this picture. And I hope you all will see it.
Thank you,
and
Freddie.
Thank you,
Freddie. That was a very fine speech. But it's rather short. Don't you think it is rather short?
Oh, I can go on if you care to have me, Mr. Valley. I've got rather used to making speeches, you know.
So have I, Freddie. But I don't really like doing it, do you?
Well, I suppose I don't, really. But I think one ought to get all the experience one can if one wants to be an actor, don't you?
Yes, I guess you're right.
Mr. Valley, if you think my speech is a little too short, I could recite to you.
Supposing you do that. Go right ahead, Freddie.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will recite to you a little poem all about a little boy who thought he knew everything in the whole wide world. Or at least his chum thought he did. It's called Andy Always Knows. Andy lives next door to us. He's 13 and a bit. Andy made a kite to fly and tied some string to it. Yesterday we took it out on such a windy day, and all the string got muddled, and the kite flew right away. But Andy said he meant it to. He shouted, There it goes. It's going all the way to China. Andy always knows. Andy told me all about the things his kite would do when it got to China, and the China Emperor, too. And how the Emperor would say, "Well, here's Andy's kite at last. A jolly decent kite it is to travel here so fast." And Andy said he didn't mind the wind, which way it blew. His kite was going straight to China. Andy always knows. Last night when I went to bed, I thought about the kite and all about the Emperor, because Andy said I might. And I thought of how they'd see the kite and all the fuss. And so I thought, we're lucky. Andy lives next door to us. Oh, but today, behind our hedge, it's dreadful what I found. Andy's kite, all in a puddle, lying on the ground. Oh, but Andy said it was quite all right. It got to China late last night. The Emperor saw the kite, he did. Then sent it back. You silly kid. Andy always knows.
The Waltz, the third song from Gold Diggers of 1935. The words are in my heart. In my song of love, the moon above makes the music, the words are in my heart. My lips may be afraid to serenade you tonight, but the words are in my heart. Roses red in rhythm are swaying, and like my heart, they're tenderly saying, "My dear, I love you so." And even though I can't say it, the words are in my heart.
My request, Stupnagel and Butt have consented to do for you what we all believe to be their greatest single contribution to radio comedy, the Colonel's famous subway sketch. A slight drama, as they term it, of rapid transit in the metropolis.
It has been discovered that one of the express stops in the subway has been slipping. Business isn't nearly as good at 72nd Street as at several other of the better-known express stops. As a result, the vice president in charge of finding out why 72nd Street is lagging has reported to the president of the subway, Mr. Quintus D. Tunnell, that things are indeed in a mess. Mr. Tunnell concludes that it's about high time the 72nd Street manager is spoken to, and spoken to sternly. He picks up his telephone.
Hello? Hello, operator. Yes, give me 72nd Street. Hello, 72nd Street. I want to speak to Mr. Burrow. Hello, Mr. Burrow. It's nice service. Thank you. This is Mr. Tunnell speaking. Oh, yes, you remember me. Yes, I'm the head of our great subway system. I wish to chide you, Mr. Burrow, because I find that your business at 72nd Street is doing very badly. What seems to be the trouble over there?
This is Mr. Burrow speaking. What was it you wanted?
Yes, I was saying that I was wondering why 72nd Street isn't taking hold the way some of our other stops are. 81st Street, for instance.
Oh, hello, Mr. Tunnell. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Oh, I'm pretty good,
thank
you.
That's fine.
Well, yes. I'll tell you, Mr. Tunnell, we've been sort of up against it here at dear old 72 lately, if you'll pardon the slang expression. So many of our people have been in Miami and Palm Beach and stuff, you know.
Yes, that sounds like a cock and bull story to me, Mr. Burrow. Our other stations are all affected by this trek to the southward, too.
Yeah?
But Times Square, for example, is doing a land office business. And as for Grand Central, phew. By your last report from 72nd Street, showed seven less people for the week of January 24th than for the previous week. Think of it, 7 less people. For shame on you.
Well, gee, I can account for that, Mr. Tunnel. You remember the Van Peister family, don't you, who live at 72nd and Park Avenue? You remember?
Yes, seems to me I remember them, Burrow. Yes, the oldest daughter, Imogene, dyes her hair.
Yeah, that's a family, yeah. Well, I understand they all left last week for crawling on the Hudson, and they won't be back until after St. Valentine's Day.
They won't, eh?
No, that would sort of account for the 7 less passengers the week of the 24th.
Yes, your voice is breaking a little.
You're telling me.
Yes. They always used your station for going downtown, the DePeisters, didn't they?
Well, Mr. Tunnel, I can't truthfully say always, because I caught them using the 81st Street subway station one morning, but ordinarily, they use our facilities here at dear old 72, you betcha.
Well, we have a problem on our hands. Well.
Yes, I too was saying well myself, only this very morning, Mr. Tunnel.
You worry.
Huh? Maybe our slogan is wrong, huh?
Huh?
I say maybe our slogan is wrong.
How is it that our slogan goes again, Burrow? How is
it? Well, it says, come, use the 72nd Street subway. The deuce with using the others.
Yes, that's very catchy, don't you think?
Yes, I sort of like it.
But see, it seems to me I'd change that deuce in there to Dickens, if
yeah,
I were
you. Well, I like Dickens better, too, I think.
Yes, read the slogan again with the Dickens in instead of the deuce, and let's hear how the new version sounds.
All right, sir. Come, use a 72nd Street subway. The Dickens with using the others. Say, that's peachy, isn't
it?
That's much better.
Yeah. Now, let me see. In addition to changing the slogan, Burrow, I think I would continue your personal calls on the customers in your territory.
Yes, sir.
Cap of that, territory?
Yes.
Yeah? Ferreting out the laggards and anything else you can think of.
Well, believe you me, I ferret out a mean laggard, Mr. Tunnel.
You do, eh?
Yeah. I got some ideas of my own, too.
Well, just keep your finger on what's going on, Burrow. The passengers at 72nd Street must increase in number, or else I'll have the subway trains go right by your station entirely. And then where would you be?
Oh, goodness only knows, Mr. Tunnel. I guess it would be the poorhouse for me. I'd hate to think of my future. I showed promise once.
Oh, come now, Mr. Burrow, old man. Brace up. Everything'll turn out all right.
Yes.
See here now. You have me sobbing, too. It's just for the good of the subway, old man. It's all just for the good of the subway.
Well, I'll go in there and fight, Mr. Tunnel. You just bet your boots I will. You can count on me.
Ah, that's the spirit, Burrow. Now brace up and be a man and give me some results.
Well, I'll give you results, all right, Mr. Tunnel. Some results. Yeah. Well, goodbye.
Time passes by. We hear another telephone conversation. Business in the 3 weeks which have elapsed since the first episode has been booming at 72nd Street. And you can tell from the voice of Mr. Tunnel that he is pleased beyond words with the whole thing.
Yes, Burrow?
Speaking?
Is this you, Burrow?
Yes.
This is Tunnel, Mr. Tunnel, president of the company.
Oh, to be sure. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks. Say, Burrow, I just wanted to tell you how happy we all are here at headquarters over the fact that your business has more than tripled since I found it necessary to chide you 3 weeks ago. What would you say caused this remarkable increase in business? Was it the ferreting out of the laggards, or just what was it, Burrow?
Well, I suppose you want the very truth, don't you, Mr. Tunnel?
We have no use for anything but the truth.
Well, it wasn't the personal calls, and it wasn't the orchestra, and it wasn't the announcer either.
Oh, don't tell me that, Burrow. Come.
I guess I'll have to confess.
Good gracious, Burrow. Don't tell me you've been padding the record.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. But maybe you've noticed a decided falling off in the business Times Square has been doing.
Yes, seems to me I have. Their business is only 1/3 of what it was 3 weeks ago.
Sir, I sneaked down to Times Square at 3 a.m. and stole all the Times Square signs and put them up here at 72nd Street.
Broadway baby says goodnight. It's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. I woke up too soon. Oh, how you thrilled me. When my lips met yours, was heavenly. We sang to the stars, we danced on the moon. The world was a year of June night. Make my dreams come true, my darling, I woke up.
We'll visit new places, new lands, and new faces the day we quit punching the clock.
You go and fix the cottage, I'll put the mortgage through. On me, I don't know whether we'll move in together, but I'm going shopping with you in the basement. I'm going shopping with you, get your basket. I'm going shopping with... serenade you tonight, but the words are in my heart. Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway, the rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxis. When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning, Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night, no man's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight. Let's call it a day. Milkman's on his way. Let's call it a day.
Next week, the Fleischman G-Star presents another variety show with another interesting cast. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company. WEAF, New York.